This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
For you. Thanks to Big Ed. Good morning. Welcome to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. Yes, indeed. I am Paul Molloy, along with Big Ed, my buddy. We thank you for joining us on this Monday, May 4th already. We are going to be talking in a few minutes with Matthew Mitchell from George Mason University about what are called Certificate of Need laws, CON laws. Have you heard about those? Well, we're going to find out what they are and why they're leading to major bed shortages in hospitals. Big time. So stay tuned for that. And if you're in Florida, a lot of you are going hip, hip, hooray, because today we start opening up with restaurants and retail finally allowed to let people in. Also, meanwhile, other side of the globe, China preparing internal memos and the like about a major world backlash because of this virus. Big time. We're going to look into that topic, too. And our eye in the sky from New York, Angelo Ceresi, will be with us. We're going to talk about how the state of New York continues to be the deadly epicenter of this pandemic. So stay tuned for that. And, boy, do we have a good show for you. In our top 10, the top 10 smallest countries in the world. Ed, you know what the smallest one is, but I want to see if you know that it's the smallest. So we'll find out about that. By the way, Freedom Works, we're sponsored in part by Andrew's Master Barbershop for the best haircut in Tampa Bay. And by the way, the barbershops and those salons, I hope they're in the next wave to open up here in Florida. Because, boy, do I need a haircut. I got to get over to Andrew's. Because they got the best haircut in Tampa Bay. They're over in Dunedin, just off State Road 580 on Overcash Drive. Just, you can walk to it from that corner, 580 and Overcash Drive. Andrew's Master Barbershop. Also, you want to listen to our show and we're not on live at the moment, go over to our website because Big Ed has all our shows podcasted, OurFreedomWorks.com. O-U-R, OurFreedomWorks.com. All right, well, so we're opening up again, and I guess it's time for us to go either to a restaurant, because I guess you can get in there, Ed, and you can have like 25% capacity. I guess what they'll do, if you go in with the booths and everything, I can just kind of visualize. You'll go in, and you'll have one booth open, then the next booth, I'll have some tape across it.
Yeah.
And then the next booth will be open. And, you know, it's kind of cool, though. I'm really kind of looking forward to going back to a restaurant. How about
you? I can just imagine probably at least this weekend, you know, when people want to go out, the lines are to get in places. You know, and then other places are opening up like your Ross's.
Right.
You know, and I've been waiting for it because I have to go get something. I wonder what it looks like right now. It probably looks like Black Friday because people are standing in line because they're only allowed to let a certain amount of people in one time.
Well, here's the way I look at it. I think it's very, very appropriate to open both retail and restaurant. Look, if they can allow people through a grocery store and figure out how to do that, and they have, why not in retail?
And I think the majority of people are educated on this thing, and they're staying 6 feet apart, most of them.
Exactly.
They're wearing a face mask if they can find them.
Right.
And they're not touching each other. So, you know, we're educated enough that we can open some of these places. And the other thing that more people than not are like Andrew, you know, that they can't,
the
barbers and stuff that they can't, and the nightclubs, you know, the other thing.
Well, because you're right up against people there. Let's be honest.
Yeah, after a few drinks, who cares about COVID-19?
And I guess that's one of the reasons why we can't go to our favorite bar. I got a favorite sports bar. that we go to on a weekly basis, and can't go there still, you know, and I can understand it to some extent. But they got the retail open. They got with a 20, they call it 25% capacity. Let's be honest. Come on. You own a restaurant. Let's say you seat maximum 60, right? Do you think you're only going to allow yourself 15 people?
No,
I don't think so.
They're gonna
You'll sneak in a few
bit,
more
yeah.
than that. That's what I'm thinking anyway. So, but this is not, by the way, for the entire state, because down in Miami-Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach counties, all bets are off. They're still not able to open up there because it's been pretty tough.
Yep.
They're more congested, though.
Right.
So they got a little issue. But DeSantis says that the White House task force recommended in phase one the reopening of restaurants and retail shops. That's why he's doing it. But they recommended a 50% capacity at the federal level. He said, I want to be safe. He's going to do it at 25%. So away we go. You know, it's. I wonder if we'll see more cars on the road. It's still kind of here in Florida. It's noticeably, I think, less busy on the street. So from that standpoint, it's been good. So DeSantis is, pushing it along. And he said that when deciding to reopen, a state could look at the new case trend or the positivity rate trend, meaning the number of positive tests, you know, coming back positive, compared to the number of tests overall. He said Florida's testing rate, now similar to California, and the positivity rate has been on the decline for a while. You know, actually, Florida's doing pretty well, if you think about it, in comparison to states like Illinois and Pennsylvania and New Jersey and Michigan and obviously New York. They all have many more people that have died from it, unfortunately. It's bad there, very bad. But Florida, and we've got several metro areas here that are quite populated, Tampa Bay, Miami-Dade, Fort Lauderdale, all of that stuff. We've kind of held our own in terms of, and we have the, I guess, if you would go to the oldest per capita person, they're here in Florida, right? And those are the people that are most affected. They're the most affected. So I see a lot of bad things said about Ron DeSantis from the media, the liberal media, by the way, the liberal media. And I think they're giving him a bad rap. I think he's doing a pretty good job. I really do. We're going to take our break. When we come back, we're going to talk about something that most people don't think about. They're called Certificate of Need laws and how they're actually affecting shortages for hospital beds.
Hear the drums echoing tonight, and she hears only whispers of some quiet conversation.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
It won't be long now till we open up again here in Florida. And man, the first place that I'm going to go is to Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. I've been to lots of haircutters over the years, and I can tell you I have never found a better one than Andrew's Master Barbershop in Dunedin. With over 50 years of experience and a staff of hair experts, Andrew's Master Barbershop is truly in a class by itself. So man, when we finally open up again, make a date for Andrew's Master Barbershop, just north of State Road 580 Main Street on Overcash Drive in Dunedin.
If you would like to become a wholesale buyer of the premium quality longevity product that you hear about right here on the Tantalk Radio Network for personal service, you can pick up the phone right now and call Lola at 727-441-3311. Again, that's Lola at 727-441-3311. Or for even faster service, log on to TantalkHealth.com. That's TantalkHealth.com. Here's to your health and longevity.
Hi, this is Jay Leno.
Hey, this is Ted Nugent.
Hi, everybody. This is David Hobbs.
Hi, this is Bob Varshu.
Hey, this is Danny the Count Coker.
Hey, this is comedian, author, and most importantly, vintage race car driver Adam Carolla.
Hi, this is Shirley Cha-Cha Muldowney.
I'm John Forrest.
Hey, this is Jack Roush.
And you're listening to Nostalgic Radio and Cars.
That's Nostalgic Radio and Cars with the most fascinating and legendary names in motorsports every Tuesday from 7 to 8 p.m. right here on the Tan Talk Radio Network.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
We are back on a Monday morning, May the 4th, and delighted to have Matthew Mitchell join us. He is a senior research fellow and director of the equity initiatives at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. Matthew, welcome to Freedom Works.
Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, it's our pleasure. Our pleasure. Hope you're safe and hunkered down. We want to talk about something that most people probably don't know much about, certificate of need laws. And you have filed a policy brief, or I released one, I should say, along with some colleagues, that says these con laws, certificate of need laws, actually affect the availability of ICU beds in hospitals. Could you, first of all, could you tell us what a con law really is? And secondly, why would that affect beds and shortages?
Yeah, so it's an unusual type of regulation, especially in a relatively market-oriented economy such as ours. Basically, it's a rule that's found in 35 states and the District of Columbia that says if you are a healthcare provider and you want to open or expand your offerings, you want to add a new bed or open a new hospital or even open a substance abuse clinic, you need to go before a regulator and prove to their satisfaction that what you claim is true, that your community actually could benefit from this product or service that you're trying to offer. So it's pretty unusual in that they're not going to be asking you questions about, you know, your safety record or your qualifications or anything like that. Instead, they're only just assessing whether or not your intuition is right that the community could benefit from this, that they could use it. And the process can take months, sometimes even years. It can cost tens, even hundreds of thousands of dollars proving this. And probably most controversially of all, your competitors will sit on the board. And even when they don't, your competitors, those who are already operating in that community, are allowed, invited to come before the board and offer their reasons for why they would prefer, all things considered, they would prefer not to have any competition.
Okay. Now, how does that affect beds, ICU beds in hospitals?
Well, it can, different states have also, can apply the process to all sorts of different types of technologies and procedures. So in some states, you need a certificate of need to open a hospital. In some, you need one to buy an ICU, an MRI scanner. And in 27 states, you need one to acquire a hospital bed. And in many of those states, you actually even need a con to transfer a hospital bed from one facility to another. So it actually directly, there's a portion of these that directly are aimed at limiting the supply of healthcare services.
Yeah, but maybe I'm a little
those that are needed.
Yeah, maybe I'm a little dense here. Why would you need one for beds, though?
Well, you know, I'm not sure if the rationale has really held up over the years, but the original idea was that. Boy, there's so much intervention in healthcare. Maybe this further that it's messed up incentive, and so doctors have an incentive, at least the framers of these laws believed, to overprescribe. And the idea was that if there is a bed in a hospital, then a doctor will probably put you in it, and that'll cost the system more money. And so maybe we should limit the supply of beds. That way, we won't overspend. The data really don't support that theory, but that was the original rationale.
If that is true, if that's the rationale, boy, have we lost our way. I mean, common sense has gone right out the window. When you say, well,
right,
a hospital needs to account for the number of beds, that it actually has. In this case, I guess we're talking about ICU beds. So now, how does this all relate, Matt, to the pandemic?
So it's required for the 27 states that require a CON for hospital beds. This applies to all sorts of different varieties of beds. And so what we did is we there is a data source, the Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation, widely cited data on hospital ICU unit bed projections, shortage projections. And so what we did is looked at, lined that data up with the certificate of need data to see what sort of relationship there is. And so what we found, first of all, some good news is most states now are not projected to experience any ICU bed shortages. So that's great news. The bad news is 11 states are expected to experience a shortage, and 8 of those are con states. So to put this in perspective, in the typical state that does not require a con for a ICU bed, it's about, there's a 13% chance of experiencing a shortage over the course of the pandemic. But in those states that do require a con for an ICU bed, it's a 30% chance. So it's more than twice as likely to experience a shortage in a con state relative to a non-con state.
So you're saying...
And what's more, the shortages are expected to be much larger. Yeah.
Okay, so you're saying these con laws, certificate of need laws, actually account for bed shortages in intensive care units. There's a direct link. Is that what
you're
saying?
That's right. Yes, there is one. They are at least one explanation. There are other things that show up and that seem to make a difference in terms of shortages, including, for example, the percentage of African Americans in the community and other factors we attempted to control for. But yes, it is a factor that seems to affect the likelihood of a shortage.
Okay, we're talking with Matthew Mitchell. He is a senior research fellow and director of the Equity Initiative at the Mercatus Center at the great George Mason University. It's a wonderful university. It really turns out a lot of good people. And we're talking about these certificate of need laws and how they affect bed shortages in intensive care units. And these days, that's the last thing we want to worry about. So Matt, what are we going to do about these laws? Is there anything? Are the feds or the administration, are they looking at these con laws?
So they're state laws, and there is some debate over the degree to which the federal government can really be involved. I should note, by the way, that the state laws were adopted at the behest of the federal government. Back in 1974, the federal government passed the National Health Planning and Resources Development Act, which actually withheld federal funds from states that did not adopt con laws. After a few years, it became pretty clear that these rules don't work. And so in 1986, Congress passed and the president signed a law that repealed that mandate. So over the time, then, several states have gotten rid of them. Really, the onus is on the states.
Okay.
The nice thing is we now have 30 years of data and 30 years of experience. We can compare outcomes in con states to non-con states. And so state policymakers are, in a good position to see whether these things work. And the evidence suggests they really don't. They lead to shortages of care, to higher cost care and lower quality care. Mm-hmm. So some policymakers across the country actually are already moving in the direction of repealing these. My hope is that with this new evidence during the coronavirus, that some of that process will be accelerated.
So we have, what, 28 states right now with con laws?
Well, there's 35 states that have some variety of a con law.
Mm-hmm.
27 states and the District of Columbia, it applies to hospital beds.
Oh, I see. Okay, so 27 plus D.C. regarding hospital beds. What are some of the states, the major states? Does Florida, for instance, or New York, or California, are they?
So,
go ahead.
Yeah, so Florida actually probably is the most recent state to pursue some pretty significant con law reform. So just last legislative session, they eliminated the requirement for a con law for a new hospital, for a specialty hospital converting into a general hospital and vice versa. They eliminated the requirement for cons for other types of specialty hospitals like children's hospitals and women's hospitals. So they're actually probably one of the most significant con reforms in many years. New Hampshire recently got rid of its program altogether. There are, this last legislative session, states all across the country, from West Virginia and Tennessee to Alaska, had on the books various forms of con reform, either complete elimination or sort of moving in the direction of fewer con laws.
So it looks like they're trending away from these laws, which sounds like it's optimistic. And maybe you're saying that maybe they should move a little bit faster, particularly right now. Is that right?
Yeah, they are trending in that direction. I should say that the laws are very difficult to get rid of because, first of all, you know, go back to the beginning of our conversation. These are sort of obscure rules. Most people don't know that they exist.
Right.
And those who are likely to be harmed by them, you know, patients, taxpayers, those are the ones who are least likely to know that they exist. But they do, you know, persist for a reason, and namely that they are anti-competitive. Mm-hmm. So those who, you know, large hospital associations and large hospitals that benefit from this lack of competition, they are pretty reliable advocates for the maintenance of these laws.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you on another topic, and if you would rather not answer on these things because it might not be your bailiwick, that's fine, but I just wanted to get a little sense of it, and it has to do with medical. And that is the unregulating, I guess you might call it, of certain things to speed up finding a vaccine for this virus. Seems like the Trump administration is working hard to get something going as soon as possible, and I would think with the advice and consent of the, you know, Congress. Do you think they're moving fast enough? Do you think the FDA still a little bit of a barrier here, or are they greasing the skids? What do you think?
Well, so first of all, it's important to look at the incentives of the FDA. The FDA is very conservative. I don't mean that in a political sense,
right,
but they are very risk averse.
Right.
Because they don't want to release permit a treatment that might have a downside. But it's obvious if they did do that, you could easily see the cost. But there is a risk on the other side. By delaying the release of treatment, even experimental ones, there is a risk that more people will die. And so you can see this in a number of cases, but you know, one prominent one, the Washington Post actually a few years ago had a great front page article talking about the difference between just suntan lotion in the United States versus Europe. So they have significantly better sunscreen in Europe than we do here, and you can actually run through some calculations to estimate the greater risk of skin cancer in the United States.
And that's because
the reason is they're basically 10
I'm sorry.
Yeah, Europe's version of the FDA is essentially 10 years ahead of the United States in terms of approving the latest technology in sunscreen.
That's kind of
and so it does have it can have some real cost.
Yeah.
So, you know, in this case, the FDA, the CDC and then the FDA really, really messed up the rollout of the testing kits. I mean, by some estimates, they were 6 weeks behind testing. And so I think they were that sort of exposed the other side of the risk trade-off and showed that, you can actually potentially endanger lives by being too conservative here. And so I do think that the FDA is now allowing states essentially to approve their own kinds of treatments, or not treatments, but tests. And so I do think that's kind of tipped the scales, at least temporarily, in the favor of a little bit more more experimentation.
Mm-hmm. Trump thinks we might be able to get a vaccine before the end of the year. That seems awful optimistic. Any thought on that?
Well, you know, I'm not a scientist, but you know, I am reading these promising reports of potential vaccines, maybe even by September. That's a significantly scaled up time frame than we were hearing a few weeks ago. So, but it's an extraordinary effort. I mean, there's dozens of trials all across the country, the world right now that are happening. So it's pretty exciting to see all this.
It
effort
is actually
go
isn't
into
it?
This.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you, Matt. and talking about the con laws.
Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, sure. Maybe we'll have you again down the road. In the meantime, stay safe.
I'd like that. Thank you very much. You too. Take care.
Okay. Matthew Mitchell from George Mason University. We're going to take our break when we come back. New York, New York. It's more than just the center of the entertainment and business world. It's the center of this pandemic. We're going to talk with our eye in the northern sky from New York, Angelo Ceresi.
It's the baddest part of town. And if you go down there, you better just beware of a man named Leroy Brown.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
It won't be long now till we open up again here in Florida. And, man, the first place that I'm going to go is to Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. I've been to lots of haircutters over the years, and I can tell you I have never found a better one than Andrew's Master Barbershop in Dunedin. With over 50 years of experience and a staff of hair experts, Andrew's Master Barbershop is truly in a class by itself. So, man, when we finally open up again, make a date for Andrew's Master Barbershop just north of State Road 580 Main Street on Overcash Drive in Dunedin.
During these trying times, our troops need our help more than ever. Right now, blood supplies are at an all-time low. Just one pint of blood can help save the lives of our servicemen and women. So give the gift of life. Give blood. It's safe, simple, and saves lives. That's courtesy of RNC Auto and Truck Repair, your complete auto shop with quality work at prices you can afford. For a free estimate, call 727-447-3343. That's 727-447-3343 for RNC Auto and Truck Repair in Clearwater.
Tom O'Brien is on the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
We are back. Hey, I just noticed, Ed, you being a sports guru, did you know Don Shula has passed away? Don Shula, who led the Miami Dolphins to an undefeated season, has died at the age of 90.
And I just saw something like two nights ago where he was looking young, and it was because it was a while ago. And I thought, is that guy still alive? I can.
Yeah. And you remember he had that great defensive team. They called it the no-name defense. I think Nick Buonaconte was a middle linebacker on that. I don't know, if back in the 70s. But they won every game. And I think they were the last team to go undefeated.
The only team.
Yeah. That's right.
17-0.
Well, they were not the only team. I think the Chicago Bears back, I wasn't there, so don't make any jokes, but back in 1940, they went undefeated. But anyway, that's a long time ago. I know. But for the Super Bowl, this team went undefeated. And Don Shula, he was 90. The Miami Herald, first to report his death. Let's see if we find out how or why. You know, at the age of 90, I guess you could just say,
if it was in New York, Cuomo would chalk it up to coronavirus.
Yes, he was one of the greatest coaches in history.
Mm-hmm.
Known for leading the unbeaten Dolphins to the Super Bowl during the 72 season. You're right. I will stand corrected. Dolphins are the only team in the NFL history to finish an entire season undefeated. So, and let's see. Doesn't say anything about how he passed away, but at the age of 90. And he was NFL Coach of the Year four times, holds the record for most wins ever. Most wins ever by a head coach.
Well, I know they always used to get together once a year when the final team would go down, you know, in the NFL season, lose the first game, so they'd pop their champagne. You remember the Patriots went 17-0, but they had to go 18-0 if they won the Super Bowl, but they lost.
Right.
So Patriots won 17-0.
Undefeated during the regular season. That's right. Yeah. Well, Don Shula, God love him. God rest his soul. All right. Well, we've got our eye on the northern sky with us, Angelo Ceresi. And Angelo, things continue to, be tough in the Empire State. First of all, how are you hanging in there? You holding on well?
We're holding on well. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah. We're holding well. We've got Rochester, our Monroe County area, we've had 127 total deaths.
Mm-hmm.
There's been 33 new confirmed cases, bringing our total up to 1,537.
Now, that's in the Rochester metro area?
Rochester metro area, yeah.
How many people approximately live there?
In Monroe County, over 200,000.
Okay. And of the 200,000, how many deaths?
127.
Okay. Okay. So, do you feel like things are getting better? Would you be willing to venture out to your local retail store or restaurant or grocery store on your own right now with a mask?
Maybe not, because I'm at a high risk. Until
are you getting cabin fever?
Oh, yeah. I've taken a ride out in our car. We've gone out down to the lake and everything like that. But you stay in the car, you know.
You don't get out, walk on the side?
Oh, yeah. I ridden my bike in the neighborhood.
Oh, okay. So you're out and you've actually felt the sun.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yesterday was like almost 70 degrees. And then the rest of this week will be in the 40s and 50s. It's going to be a lousy week, you know, with rain and cold again.
All right. Now, your feelings aside, what is the general mood of the people of the Rochester metro area towards starting to open up?
Well, we've had protests out here just like in other cities, too. You know, people want to get back to business and everything like that.
When you say you've had protests, you mean like...
We've had protesters just like...
Around City Hall in Rochester?
Yeah.
What do you think the mood is overall? Do you think people are still feeling...
People
maybe...
want to get back to work. Just for the matter, I think people want to try to get back to normal and stuff like that.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I don't know if it, you know, you hear both sides of the story, you know. There are people that are saying that you could start a second wave, you know. It'll probably be worse than the first one, but you don't know, you know. I think we are in untested grounds.
I think that's exactly right. And we don't know what we don't know.
Right. We don't know anything about this virus because, number one, this is the first time we've been battling something like this. Number two, there is no vaccine, and there is no cure.
Not yet.
Not yet, anyway.
Right.
But, you know, we're in untested grounds. And I think both sides of the picture, there is a there's justification, you know. I mean, I wouldn't want to be around. I mean, I went out. We went out yesterday down by Lake Ontario, you know, and a lot of people out there by the beach and all that stuff. And I'll tell you, they were congregating. I think we saw just a couple of people with masks on, and that's it.
Are they allowed to go to a beach and congregate in minimum numbers there yet? I don't think they are, correct?
It's supposed to be in minimum numbers, but nobody's following suit on that.
But you are allowed to congregate along a beachfront in New York?
Not like yesterday, no. They're not supposed to.
No, I didn't think you were.
No, because we're still in shutdown mode. That New York paused. The governor's supposed to reevaluate it on May 15th.
Speaking about Andrew Cuomo, the governor of New York,
governor, right?
Do you think he's doing a good job right now? Is he handling it well?
I guess he's handling it as best as he could, but you know he's very dramatic about it. He's politicking, you know. One minute he was blaming Trump, and the next minute he's not. You know this and that. He's your typical politician.
It's interesting, Angelo, and we're talking with our eye in the northern sky, Angelo Ceresi, who hunkers down in Rochester, New York, and by the way, is the brother of our master barber. I think you're the older brother, right, Angelo?
No, we have another brother.
Okay.
We have a middle brother. My other brother has MS, and he lives next door to me.
Oh, he lives next to you.
Yes, he's married to my wife's twin sister.
Well, let me figure this out. Wait. Wait, your brother next door,
yes,
is married to your wife's twin sister.
Yes.
Do you guys ever get confused?
No.
Okay, that's good. That's good.
One's got blonde hair, the other one's a brunette. Mine's a brunette.
Okay, well then we're okay with this. But they're twins.
They're twins.
They're more like fraternal twins than identical twins. Would you say that? Or are they identical and one just they just dye their hair?
No, they're identical.
They're identical twins?
Yeah.
Wow. Do they get along? I shouldn't be asking these personal questions.
Oh, yeah,
questions.
They do. Okay. They're very cool.
Do they have the same personalities?
Different.
Isn't that interesting?
But, you know, in some aspects, they do. Some aspects, they don't, you know.
But they have different personalities.
Different personalities.
That's good. Actually, it is good. You wouldn't want someone to be a clone of somebody else in behavior, you know?
No.
Yeah. Okay, so I even forget now. See, Angelo, you made me forget. You made me forget what I was going to ask you. I think I was going to ask you something about...
Well, we see each other, you know, through... she'll stop by the house or stay on the sidewalk, and we'll talk by the window, you know.
Now, if they live next door, that's like the house next door?
The house right next door.
Okay. How long have you guys lived together like that, next door?
Let's see, 1974, about 40-some-odd years.
Wow. Holy cow. That's great. So you think that overall, oh, I know. I wanted to talk about the way that politics, you would think that somehow, I mean, maybe this is a good idea of real behavior of people. You would think in a pandemic, we would put aside our politics, much like, if I might use a, like World War II, where everybody got on the same page, right?
Right.
Against the Germans. Mm-hmm. Everybody got on the same page. We were going to win the war. And politics went out the window. Why doesn't politics go out the window here, Angelo? Why do you think?
Because the Democrats have been so adamant. The Democratic Party is not the party that it used to be. They have moved so far way out in left field, and you got different personalities in there now that some are bitter that they have lost the power that they have, which Schumer and Pelosi, it's gotten worse than it ever has. You got different ages, younger people in there that, like Ocasio-Cortez and Ilhan Omar, whatever her name is.
Ilhan Omar, yeah.
You know, and you got radical people. I mean, I think it started in the 60s when the Democratic Party started getting radicalized. After Kennedy, you know?
After Robert or John?
John Kennedy.
Okay, gotcha.
And even after Robert Kennedy,
mm-hmm.
It got so radicalized. Was it in 1968 they had in Chicago,
yes.
They had the protests out there at the Democratic Convention?
Yeah, I remember that very well. Mm-hmm. Yes,
you know, and it really, really started getting really radical. And as time went on, it has gotten worse on the line. They've gone so far to the fact, they've gone so far to the left, where just like this thing that now with Kavanaugh, they berated him and did everything about it.
Brett Kavanaugh, the Supreme Court Justice.
The Supreme Court Justice. You had Kamala Harris, Amy Klobuchar. If you remember, they were asking him questions about his teenage years, his yearbook.
Oh, they had an FBI probe. They had, of course, they had him already in a confirmation hearing.
Right, in the confirmation.
So they all were already, you know, they already had a setup.
It was already set up to bombard him.
Okay, go ahead.
You have that guy Blumenthal from Connecticut who said he was a Vietnam veteran, but then he retracted and says, "Oh, I misspoke." You know, how do you misspoke? You either were there or you weren't, you know?
So there's a double standard, you think?
Double standard.
Right now between the way they treated Brett Kavanaugh and the way they're treating Joe Biden.
And the way they're treating the president. I understand, now, at least I was there in the 1860s when they treated President Lincoln pretty bad, but I can just imagine how they treated him back then.
He apparently was treated horribly by the press.
Right, and now they're doing the same thing with Trump. They're trying to belittle him and, you know, just lying about everything he says and does. It's terrible. It's so
But don't you think, and I'm not, you know, we're pretty pro-Trump here on the show. Don't you think that Donald Trump tends to exaggerate, and what they do is, because he exaggerates, they kind of pick that apart a little bit?
Oh, I'm sure they do. You know,
let's be honest, he exaggerates.
Right.
Everything's the greatest.
Right. He's not embellishing anything.
I think he embellishes. Don't you? Don't you think
he... Maybe a little bit.
Sure he does. If it's the greatest of all time in certain things, you know, like nobody's ever seen before. How many times has he said something and then at the end he says, like nobody's ever seen before?
Right.
No, that's embellishing. That's embellishing. I don't mind it. I really don't. I mean, I can see he's acting like we all do.
But he's kind of backed it up, too. That's the thing.
Yeah. I mean,
you remember the China deal? Well, you know, we're going to be winning in that, and it happened. The unemployment. The unemployment and stuff like that.
Right.
He's backed it up.
No, you know, he's been optimistic, I think, during this whole pandemic. That's what I think people like about him. By the way, Gallup has him up 6 points.
That's beautiful.
He's up 6 points. He's at the highest, according to Gallup, that he's ever been, or tied for the highest he's ever been.
Well, I think that with the American people are really seeing the Democrats for who and what they really are. I mean, you know, like you got that Alyssa Milano. She was sitting right there in the front facing Kavanaugh, Justice Kavanaugh, when he was going through the confirmation hearings. But now she believes Biden. Right?
There's no question about the politics.
I believe. Where are these hashtag me too, huh?
I think the Democrats are really hanging on the, whatever they call the thing, hanging by the by their own petard, because they're hoisted, rather, on their own petard. They are turning and becoming hypocritical on something even noticeably more, if you can say it this way, there seems to be more backup to Tara Reid's claims.
Right.
Than there was to that lady that was...
Blazey Ford.
That Blazey
couldn't
Ford
couldn't remember
against,
the room. Couldn't remember the address.
And yet, the Democrats, almost to a person, are saying, oh, you know, I'm not so sure about this one.
Yeah. Well, how about...
How about that Kirsten Gillibrand? She really comes off.
Oh, she's another one. Brutal.
Yeah,
New Yorker, you know.
Yeah.
And what about Feinstein, the senator that
Diane
she helped
Feinstein from
letter?
California?
Mm. Yeah, from the last, oh, I got this letter, you know.
Yes.
The hang up.
Where is she these days?
I
haven't seen Diane Feinstein around. Is she hiding behind Nancy Pelosi or something? I haven't seen her recently.
She must be.
Uh-huh.
They all don't want to be questioned about it.
No.
But that's what gets me. How come nobody, like, nobody's asking, like, Madonna, where are you? Here's a lady that claims something, right? And mm-hmm. like you say, there's more corroboration on her part than there was on all those other ones.
Yes. And right? Her mother phoned
where
in.
Where are they?
Her mother phoned in right around that time to
Larry
King.
We
have it on tape. So somebody thought something was going on.
Had Biden on tape with his quid pro quo, remember?
Yes. Yes, indeed.
You even had that on tape.
Yes.
But yet, where are these people?
Right. My friend, it is always a pleasure to talk with you. You sound well, and we want you to just continue to remain safe, Angelo. And we will look forward to talking with you again, God willing, next Monday.
Oh, thank you so much. You guys stay safe. Oh, by the way, the schools are closed up here now until fall.
For sure, huh?
For sure.
Wow.
The governor says no school until next.
Wow, that's really disrupting for those kids. It really is. Well, thank you again, Angelo.
You too. Stay safe, and we'll be hearing from you, calling you.
All righty. Angelo Ceresi, we're going to take our break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about how China is facing a backlash because of this virus, and they're preparing for it.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
It won't be long now till we open up again here in Florida. And man, the first place that I'm going to go is to Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. I've been to lots of haircutters over the years, and I can tell you I have never found a better one than Andrew's Master Barbershop in Dunedin. With over 50 years of experience and a staff of hair experts, Andrew's Master Barbershop is truly in a class by itself. So man, when we finally open up again, make a date for Andrew's Master Barbershop just north of State Road 580 Main Street on Overcash Drive in Dunedin.
Are you looking for some great restaurants? For some great wines? Where are the great chefs? Listen to Dine Out Radio, heard every Wednesday on the Tantalk Radio Network. 12 to 1 p.m., We'll tell you where all the great events are. We'll have Food and Wine magazine and Bon Appetit magazine. We'll have their editors and writers on each month. And maybe we'll throw in a couple surprises. Check out the website, diningoutradio.com. My bridge is
all... Hey, everybody, this is Pastor Marcia McAllister from Beacon of Hope Ministries. We want you to join us on Sunday afternoons at 3 o'clock on this radio station for our two-hour show, talking to you about the Word of God, giving you great contemporary music, some lively chat, and just some food for thought. You'll be encouraged to know how very much God loves you and how He has a plan for your life. Join us this coming Sunday at 3 o'clock on Living the Good Life.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hey, we're back for the final segment of Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. We're here, by the way, 10 to 11 a.m. every Monday, Tuesday, and Friday on the Great Tan Talk Radio Network. Well, apparently an internal Chinese memo is warning that Beijing is facing a rising wave of hostility in the wake of the coronavirus outbreak that could tip the relations with the United States into a confrontation. And the report, which came early last month by the Ministry of State Security to top leaders there, including the president, said that global anti-China sentiment is at its highest since the 1989 Tiananmen Square crackdown, if you remember that one. That's where that guy stood in front of the tank, and a worldwide outrage at the way the people were being treated then. The report was drawn up by the Institute of Contemporary International Relations, which apparently is a think tank there. Well, you know, we all know that there's outrage. Every single country, with all the deaths that have occurred from this thing, and by the way, we're already over 60,000 here now in the United States. In fact, we're on our way to 70,000. 67,700 people have died in the United States. Worldwide, 248,000 people are dead. So you're darn right. And I think even Russia must be upset. Look what's going on in Russia. They have it terrible over there. And they've got Germany upset. They're going to have... This might, I would not be surprised if this might undo the current Chinese government. You know, they try to keep a lid on everything, but they're lying to their own people. And you know that they're lying about the number of people that have been affected in China. They have many, many more people that have died from it in China, I think, than anywhere. But they don't, it's not reflected in their numbers. But that's what a closed society will do to you. That's what a closed society like China and Russia, you know, run by dictators, will do to you.
Kim Jong-un.
Oh, my goodness.
Kim I heard Jong-un. He's better.
Yeah. He's been speaking about
been cited.
Now, apparently, the last I heard, maybe he had a little surgery.
They're saying that.
And he went to one of his 14 resorts or something to get better? What do you think?
They're saying he never even had surgery. Korean.
Do you think he went there just to get away from the virus?
I don't know.
Maybe. I bet he's paranoid enough to say, I don't want to be anywhere near the castle.
No. Nope.
Take me to one of the resorts where we don't have as many people.
Maybe he thought it was a plot to take him out. Who knows?
However, if you see him walking in the latest videos of him walking around, he seems to be walking rather stiffly. Have you noticed?
No.
Yeah. And they made mention of the fact that he doesn't look like he's 100%. Mm. So I don't know about that one. But he's still alive.
Yeah.
He didn't die on the operating table, Ed.
Maybe Rodman went over there and they went on an all-night binge or an all-week binge or something like that.
Maybe, you know? Rodman, in some ways, is like a witch doctor and could helped him heal. Is there any chance of that?
I don't know. Dennis Rodman is definitely wired differently.
Well, think about it. With all of his tattoos and everything, he kind of looks like he could be a medicine man. I don't know.
Yeah.
No? All right. Let's switch gears, Ed. You got to get over to the drums. And I think you have a chance at knowing what the number one smallest country is. We have the top 10 smallest countries in the world. Now, this is by geography, okay? Mm-hmm. And it comes from the World Atlas. So they ought to know, right? All right, without further ado, top 10 smallest countries in the world. Number 10, Malta. That's an island country in the Mediterranean made up of three islands. It has a population of over 450,000 people, making it one of the most densely populated countries in the world. Number 9, Maldives. That's a popular tourist destination in the Indian Ocean. Smallest country in Asia, but they've got over 1,192 coral islands. Some of them must be like rocks, not very big, spread over 90,000 square kilometers. But the whole complete topography, only 300 kilometers. Mm. Okay, number 8, St. Kitts and Nevis, the mother colony of the West Indies. These two islands in the Caribbean were some of the first islands to be occupied by Europeans. They're only 261 kilometers. Number 7, the Marshall Islands, only 181 kilometers. This is an island country found in the Pacific Ocean, approximately halfway between the U.S. and Hawaii. Number 6, Liechtenstein. You ever heard of that one, Ed?
No.
It's located between Switzerland and Austria. It's only 160 kilometers. Richest country in the world per capita. Did you know that? Number 5, San Marino. No, not in California. This is surrounded by Italy, the third smallest country in Europe, population of only 30,000 people, 61 kilometers. Number 4, Tuvalu. You ever been to Tuvalu?
Not yet.
If you ever do go to Tuvalu, I will say Tuvalu. And it's only 26 kilometers. It's located in the Pacific Ocean northeast of Australia. There you go. Number 3, Nauru. Never heard of it. 21 kilometers. Island nation located east of Australia. Smallest island country in the world. Okay. By the way, 97% of its men and 93% of its women are obese. I don't know why.
Not a whole lot of treadmills, evidently.
Oh, my goodness. I bet they got a diabetes problem there. Yeah. All right, number 2, Monaco. You've heard of Monaco?
Yeah.
Okay. Did you know it's only 2 kilometers? 2 kilometers! It's located on the French Riviera. It's home to the largest number of millionaires and billionaires in the world. Per capita. All right, Ed. I want you to think real deep. I know that you know it.
I'm going
to
say something like
Think. Take your time.
Something like Grenada. I don't know.
Okay.
But then I'm thinking, didn't the UK, didn't London buy that back or something? I don't know.
Okay, here we go. You know, Grenada is a good one, but it's not the right one. It's the Vatican City.
Oh, really?
Yeah, did you know it's not only a principality, it's a country? It's 0.44 kilometers. It fits entirely within Rome. And by the way, it's also home to the biggest church in the world, St. Peter's Basilica. So the smallest country has the world's largest church. Isn't that interesting? And it also has that guy in the white suit.
I was going to say,
and he's not the good humor man.
Doesn't the Pope hang out there?
Yeah, I think he does. All right. Thank you so very much for joining us. We will be back again tomorrow, Tuesday. Stay safe, and remember that freedom works.